Welcome to the second 303 Sports Podcast. We're talking NBA today with the MVP of the best intramural team in Pullman, Washington, Washington State Cougars, Kieran McGuire, shooting guard. Welcome to the show.
Yes, absolutely. Our last podcast was so good, we decided to give you another, I guess.
I decided to give you another, bro. I'm the host. But, all right, so NBA, that's your thing, right? Why do you like the NBA so much? Tell me.
That's my bread and butter.
What makes
it? Let's see. Why do I like the NBA? I can't, off the top of my head, I can't really give you a good explanation because I am one of the only people I know that can sit down and watch a full NBA game start to finish with two teams that I care nothing about. Yeah. So that's why I'm the resident expert.
Yeah, because I can't really think why. You're not white. You're not tall. You're kind of good, but, I mean, you're better than most people I know personally, but it's other people that I know of or kind of know that are, you know, college players and whatnot. Anywho, we're going to talk about a couple big issues in the NBA today. We're talking about rookies, like the top teams. What do we think the champions are going to be? Ron Artest, is he crazy or is he just like that? And then it's a special anniversary for Greg Oden. He's approaching the 82 game mark. He's currently at 81, so he's almost completed a full season in 3 years, or really two and a half. But he's getting there. Good for Greg, huh? What do you think about Greg?
Yeah, wait. Can you only imagine if Portland had taken Kevin Durant instead of Greg, the big waste of time Oden?
I think Portland has some other draft issues of in the mid-80s that they are also thinking about still. Nightmares.
Yeah.
MJ. Oops. Yeah. Okay. So let's start it off with top rookies in the league. You know, there's a bunch of guys. The draft wasn't that good this past year. It started off with Blake Griffin to the Clippers. He's out. He doesn't play. He hasn't played yet. He's making $4.9 million to sit on the bench. I guess the good news for the Clippers, if there is any, but, I mean, he is 20 years old still. He's a young guy. Do you think he has a future for the Clips?
I think I watched him when he played not only this past year in college, but the year before when that was the whole Derrick Rose, Michael Beasley year, and he didn't really get that much. And I mean, I'm talking to the guy who would know better than me. He's in your conference, but from what I saw, that first year, he was a really good player, and I kept wondering why nobody was talking about him because he's an absolute monster. Another thing that I saw was that he. I mean, he's a power forward, or are they playing him at center?
Power forward, I believe.
But yeah.
In college, it's kind of ambiguous. There's forwards and guards, basically.
Yeah. I think maybe if he had come into the league 5 years ago, 6 years ago, he would have had a really tough time. But now that the center position is getting so small, like Dwight Howard and like centers like that where they actually need to be athletic, and the types of centers like Shaq and Yao, they're not going to last. Probably in the next 4 years, we're going to see just hybrid players like Dwight Howard who are big and strong but not what people are used to at the center position.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But back on the subject of Griffin, I think he's going to be an okay player. He runs pretty well, and he's strong, and he's obviously going to rebound. He's going to rebound, and he's got pretty good offensive capabilities. But he sometimes, like watching him last year, he would just look awkward.
Yeah.
He'd shoot the ball, in the post, he'd make a move and put up these awkward shots. Like, they'd go in, and I guess that's all that matters, but I think for, like, his longevity, there are a ton of power forwards and centers who are good in this league, and I guess that is speaking to how shallow the draft was, but I think he'll be an okay player if he manages to stay away from injuries, but
he might
I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, he might be an injury-prone guy, and maybe in the prime of his career he can be like a 15-11. I don't think he's going to be a centerpiece, just a solid role player, like a good three.
Yeah.
Good two. But let's move on to another guy who's actually playing, Johnny Flynn, playing for the T-Wolves. Let me go through his stats real quick. He's averaging 29.2 minutes, 14.3 points, and 3.8 assists per game. You know, the big controversy was he and Rubio were drafted by this same team. They're basically the same position, so the T-Wolves basically just ruined their chance with Rubio with him. He's playing fairly well, but he's not playing as much recently, where his coach wants him to be more aggressive. He's walking the ball up the court a little bit. What do you think about Johnny Flynn's play so far this year?
I have not been able to watch as much of him as I would have liked. But what I have seen, he's good. He's an undersized guard, but he's still really, really young. And he's gonna grow, and he's gonna fill out. I think he's gonna, and not to make like a too much of a leap, I think he's gonna be like. He's gonna be the type of player like Chris Paul, not the level, but I mean he's fast. He's a great shooter. He knows what to do with the ball. Watching him at Syracuse, he could just light up the other team.
What about like a Brandon Roy? Brandon Roy's not as good as Chris Paul, but like a Deron Williams. Both those guys they're not like Chris Paul, the highest of the high, but they're the next tier. Do you think he could join that?
I'd say in a year, maybe 2 years, he's going to be like Deron Williams.
Right. Well, it's also up to the T-Wolves. I mean, they're a pretty bad team. They only have 2 wins this year, one coming at Denver, unfortunately. But, you know.
Yeah.
Let's stay on the Western Conference. A guy that used to light it up for Davidson, Stephen Curry, playing for the Warriors. He's playing 30.8 minutes a game, averaging about 10 points, shooting about 43% and 38.5% from three. He's getting a lot of minutes. He's not jacking up shots a lot. He gets 5 assists per game, so he seems to be like a team player. But that offense is high gear. How do you think his career is going to go? You think he's just going to be a perimeter guy? That's what I think.
Curry, for some reason, and I think it's if he had come out after his junior year. He did come out after his junior year. If he had gone out after his sophomore year, which was that tournament run, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
If he had come out after that, he would be putting up numbers like Brandon Jennings. He had a better team that year, and they would just let him go. But junior year, he had to do everything. I mean, he had to take the ball up the court. He had to make every single thing happen. And that just exhausted him. So I think what's happening to Curry now is he's still in the mindset of he needs to create for his team in order to win, which he doesn't for Golden State. Those are NBA players.
Yeah.
If they sit him down, because that whole team is selfish.
Yeah, well, that's how Golden State is. They've always been like that.
If they sit him down and tell him to play Golden State type of basketball, he can really turn it around. But as far as what he's doing now, nobody should have 5 assists in any game, or should be averaging 5 assists on Golden State's team.
Well, sure they are. They just pass it around. They just jack it up. Somebody has to pass it to him. I mean, they don't just dribble and drive. I mean, they jack it. But
it shouldn't be one player creating that many assists. It should be them kicking it around like that. Everybody should have 3. I mean, down to like the 8th player on the bench, everybody should have 3 assists. But that offense should not run through one person like that. And that's the way he's playing.
Alrighty, so I think eventually his career is going to look sort of like a Peja Stojakovic, not a guy he's probably a three, maybe a four, a guy that's just going to hit you from long range. He'll get hot for a little bit, and then he'll disappear so he'll have like a hot 2 weeks, a hot, you know, month or so, and then disappear, and then come back. I think he's going to be one of those guys, just a streaky shooter, but he's skilled nonetheless. That's why he's in the NBA. Let's move on to the guy that created a little bit of stir in the draft because he decided to forego college, play in Europe for a year, and then come to the NBA, Brandon Jennings for the Bucks. He's averaging 21.5 points a game in 34.8 minutes, so he plays a lot, shooting 42% and 47% from threes, 5.8 assists a game. Recently, he's been in a slump. His total amount of shots is greater than his point total in his past four games, which means he's far below 50% because you include free throws in that point total as well. But Brandon Jennings lighting it up earlier in the year. Do you think he's a star in the making?
Yeah, I think he's gonna be a real good player. I don't think he's going to stay in Milwaukee, and I think the reason I say that is it's in his best interest to not stay in Milwaukee. Brandon Jennings is not a franchise leader, if that makes sense. He's a franchise player, no doubt. He can score a ton, but he's not a player that you build a championship around. You need a team first player, and he might grow into that, but there's so many issues with his maturity, just because of the whole playing in Europe, because he doesn't want to go to college. Before he went to Europe, when he made that decision, a lot had changed in between that time and now, because he went over to Europe. He played with all those guys, with those men, people who were guys who were 10, 15 years older than him, and he really had to adjust to that type of lifestyle where not everything is just given to you because he's a high school star. So I think that helped him miles and miles. I would even go as far as to say that it was better for him to have gone to Europe instead of college, but not for the reasons that he did it.
Right. Yeah, he wanted to go just to be a star.
Yeah. He didn't want to deal with college. Yeah.
Exactly. So let's move on to the guy that Nuggets picked up, Ty Lawson. He's more of a role player, but where we got him in the draft is he's basically a steal. He's averaging about 20 minutes a game, 8.8 points, 3.5 assists. He's Chauncey Billups' right hand man, essentially, shooting over 50% from the field. I think the thing about Ty Lawson is he's on a good team, but he knows his place. He knows he's just a role player. He knows he's just a bench guy. It's tough for a guy that was the star at UNC to just come to a team and sit on the bench, come off, and, like, play well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I really like Lawson, and I'm not trying to sound like a homer right now, but I've obviously been able to see a little bit more of him. But he's the guy that I see. I mean, and obviously he got landed in a much better situation than all these other rookies with the Nuggets. But he's embraced his role. He comes off the bench. He's an energy guy, and I think that he really is going to contribute to his team, maybe not as Jennings is with the points, but I think he's going to be a bigger contributor in the long run because, I mean, now they have J.R. Smith, they have Birdman, and now, like, Ty Lawson, these three energy guys. And Lawson brings a mentality that those other two don't, a leadership mentality. Because watching him, he doesn't look like a rookie.
No,
he looks like a grizzled veteran.
Exactly. Well, he is. He's been to so many Final Fours with UNC. I mean, he's one of the few guys that goes 4 years in college and then comes to the NBA and like just jumps right into it. Because usually the 4 year college guys are, you know, Tyler Hansbrough. You know, he's good in college because he's better than all the other average, you know, kind of short guys, but you know, he just outwills them instead of out talents them. But Ty Lawson's, you know, he's kind of the rare breed in this day and age because he went to college for all those years. And so he's got the postseason experience. So it'll be good to see in the playoffs when bench depth is so paramount, you know, what kind of team the Nuggets have with him. Well, I want to move now to a rookie debate from a couple years ago. It's a big day for Greg Oden, or coming up on a big day. He is at 81 games right now, so his next game will be his 82nd, which means he will finally have completed an entire NBA season. Obviously, his counterpart, who went to the Sonics, now the Thunder, Kevin Durant, is becoming a star. So I'm going to go over his numbers, Oden's, for his first 82 games. He's got 22.5 minutes per game, 9.5 points per game on 57% shooting. Mind you, most of those are under the bucket. 7.1 rebounds and 1.4 blocks per game. Granted, this season he's improving his stats. Those stats are all higher, but that's his line for his career. Durant, on the other hand, has played 172, so more than double what Oden has thus far. He's averaging 37 minutes, 23.2 points, 5.6 rebounds, and 45% shooting. Mind you, that's in his career. This year, he's doing a lot better. You know, he's in the top five in scoring. So, I mean, this is an obvious question. You know, the Sonics / Thunder made the right call here, and Oden, I don't know, maybe he'll grow up, maybe he'll become a good player, but, you know, what do you think about those two at this day?
Yeah, I remember thinking during that draft that it was really a pick between the two. Oden was a good college player. He really took whatever he wanted in every single game, except for they played Georgetown in the tournament, and he had to go up against Roy Hibbert, and that was supposed to be a big a huge like matchup between two great big men, and they kind of canceled each other out. And if Greg Oden, I mean don't get me wrong, like Roy Hibbert was a good college player. He's with the Pacers now, I believe, right?
Hibbert, I can check on that. Just keep going.
Yeah. He was a good college player. You haven't heard anything from him in the NBA. And if that type of player can really neutralize Greg Oden one-on-one, because they just let him play in that game. They went one-on-one. That says a lot about Greg Oden. I think that anytime he starts to play well, it's overanalyzed because he was the number one pick. And I genuinely do think that he's going to end up being a 12-8 type of player, maybe even a bench player in the next couple of years. I don't think Portland will turn him into a full bench player because it's hard for teams to give up on those types of players that they spend those high picks on, because it shows that you know that you are wrong. I think Oklahoma City has really... They're going to be good. They've drafted really, really well. And it just like goes to show, like with like Kevin Durant, like they saw something. I mean, he scored at will in college. And the big critique of him was that he's tall, but he's really thin. He needs to put on some weight. But I mean, in the NBA, he just outworks people. I mean, and he's really deceptive because he is so tall. But he's got great speed, and he really, it looks like that, like he's really, he can take any shot he wants. He can create his own shots. Nobody can get high enough to block those. The only players that can do that are either the elite defenders or big men, but he's just going to destroy any big guy who comes out and tries to guard him. So I think that every team is always looking for a valuable center, because that, along with a good point guard, like that is the most like sought after position, because they can be so dominant. But those types of players don't always pan out. I mean, more often than not, those are the ones that don't pan out. So I think that Kevin Durant, and hindsight is 2020, but if they could go back, like Kevin Durant should have been the number one pick, hands down, based on his college performance. So, yeah.
So here's, what do you think? Here's where Durant is at this season. Mind you, he is 21 years old. He turned 21 2 months ago. His birthday's in September, so he's still a young, and this is his third season in the NBA. He's fourth in scoring, averaging 27.7 points and 7.1 rebounds. He's already a star, and he's only 21. And he's playing for an average team. They're 10-8 at this point, I believe. I think they might make the playoffs. I think they might shock someone in the playoffs. If he puts his, like, just decides, all right, this is me, my time, and he just starts draining it from downtown, like, you know, they can make it to the, maybe shock someone, make it to another round, maybe make it to a seventh game against this, in a series, maybe against, say, Phoenix. If Phoenix plays well, he gets a good seed. I think he might lead him to a sixth seed. I think he's a leader as well, because I remember when he came out of college, his biggest decision was about whether to come out of college, because he was enjoying the college life so much. Like, he likes going, just like the party college life, like the going to class and learning and that part of it. But in the end, maybe he made the right decision, because he's already killing it at the age of 21. At this point, he'd be, what, a senior. You know, he'd probably have this number, you know, number one in the country. But, you know, he was close enough then, and he's a star now. He's probably going to be an all-star, and good for him. Let's move on now. We're going to talk about some contenders, the contenders in the NBA. Top six teams, or top teams so far this year. Boston is 15-4. Orlando's 15-4. In the West, Denver's 14-5. Lakers are 14-3. Phoenix is 14-5 as well. Other teams that are playing pretty well, kind of under the radar, Atlanta 13-5. And Cleveland, although all that stuff about LeBron, you know, it's only him. They're still first place in their division. They're 13-5. Give me your top five, top six teams that you like so far this year.
The top six. Well, I don't know if I'm sold on Atlanta. They're a weird team. They're kind of like a type of Detroit back when they had that run of all those Eastern Conference series. But I think Atlanta, they're all athletic. It's such an athletic team. Josh Smith and all those players, but they don't really. I mean, the NBA, when you can break it down and you can really eliminate from day one, if you know the injury status and all that, you can really eliminate almost every team or most of the league based on the way that you need to build a team to win in the NBA. You need to the past 15 years.
It's a simple eyeball test. It's a simple eyeball test. You just look at the team and you just kind of get the hunch. Are they good? Are they bad? And you can tell.
Yeah.
You can just playoffs. Boom, boom, boom. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And you kind of have it. And then, you know, they kind of jostle for position, especially in the West, because everyone's so stacked at the top. And the top four teams are usually only separated by about five games. But so the top teams really only surface once you get to the playoffs, when it's go time. Which makes an interesting point for San Antonio, because they're in third place in their division right now behind Dallas and Houston. They're 9-7. I looked at their stats. Tim Duncan leads them in every single meaningful stat category: points, rebounds, blocks, and assists. Even assists for a big man. Tony Parker's playing all right. Maybe he's just a playoff guy. You know, he's like kind of a role player, but I think he just brings his A game later in the season. I think that's what the Spurs are doing. I think they're just going to hang out third, second place in their division, and then, you know, once the All-Star break comes, they're just going to turn it on, and you don't want to play them after that. They'll probably end up securing a 4 seed, maybe a 3 seed, and then they'll have home. They don't even need home court.
Yeah, I think San Antonio is really like a snake in the grass right now because they don't need to play well to get into the playoffs. They and I think what they're doing or what they're gonna do is they're gonna play just well enough to get in there and do as much as they can to conserve Tim Duncan because he's really, I mean, he's really hitting the end hard. Like you saw, we saw last year. Tony Parker's a great player. Manu Ginobili is a good player. They added Richard Jefferson. I'm pretty sure everybody thought that with the offseason that the Spurs had, they were just going to ransack the league and just murder people. And it's not been the case because they're a smart team. They're a very, very smart team. They're going to let everybody duke it out. They're going to get into the playoffs, and they're just going to win the way that they always win, 90-82, just really boring games where the final buzzer sounds like, oh, that's over. I guess we go home. That was a good effort, you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
I really like DeJuan Blair. He's a good player. And that was a great, and they got so much credit for their draft in getting Blair. I think as far as my contenders, Boston of course is going to be there. I don't think Boston.
You don't think they last
as good.
Like, as in their
the whole Kevin Durant thing last year really hurt them, losing him, because I think that was their last year to win it. They're another year older, that whole cliche. But the thing that kind of tips me off is them signing Rasheed Wallace. Kendrick Perkins is a good player. I mean, he's a good player, and he's really getting better. And they're the team that won the championship. I mean, they had Garnett, they had Rondo, Ray Allen, they had Paul Pierce, they had Kendrick Perkins, then they had a couple role players to throw in there. That team won a championship, and they won it handily over the Lakers.
Yeah,
and the Artest, but it's really a toss-up between him and Ariza in my mind. So the whole fact that Boston signed Rasheed Wallace, some guy who's high risk, high reward, and he's gonna be—I mean, he could throw people off on that team, and really rub people the wrong way. But they didn't. If they knew that they were gonna be as good as they were, they wouldn't have signed Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, I think it might have been a desperation move because honestly, when they made all those signings for the 08 season, I don't think they thought that was going to be their year. I thought they would decide to build a nice core and work on it for a year, but then they realized, oh wait, we have Kevin Garnett and he's finally motivated. Like, well, he's always motivated, but like he's finally on a good team that can win a championship, so he's going to stop at nothing to win it this year now. So they're like, you know, later in that season, they kind of just said, oh, well, okay, let's make a run at this. They made some signings and then just, you know, steamrolled through the playoffs, killed the Lakers. Paul Pierce just took over in that series. I think they peaked with their core a little bit earlier than they expected because Kevin Garnett's a little crazy and he wanted it so much.
Yeah, I think the whole signing of Wallace was reactionary, of course, to Cleveland getting Shaq, but also in a reaction to Orlando really showing that they're a good team. But I think
by signing Vince Carter.
No, last year. I mean, really, really showing that they can beat the elite of the East and making themselves a contender in the East. So Boston went out and got Rasheed Wallace. A guy that can score some points. He can shoot the three. But I think they really signed him as a guy that's going to take fouls, so they can save Perkins.
Yeah, save their big names till the end. Just kind of just churn through the regular season. So we've talked about some of the teams. Let me give you my final four. I think the Lakers are going to make it again to the Western Conference Finals. I think they're going to get the number one seed again. And I don't really see any other quality teams in the West. So it's going to be kind of a crapshoot between Dallas might be good. The Nuggets made it last year, but are they the same team? George Karl, he's not a notorious back-to-back season guy. He can get it done for one season, maybe not the next. The Suns, they're run and gun. They've never had success in the playoffs with that style. You know, the Spurs could do it. I haven't seen anything from them this year, but I think the Nuggets are going to make it back to the Western Conference Finals against the Lakers. And then I think the Cavs are going to be upset again early. They're not going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. The Magic, I believe, could take it. Actually, those two, I don't know. You can convince me either way. And I think the Celtics are going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals for those. And then after that, I think the Lakers are going to win the championship because Kobe has such a good supporting cast that he can just go in cruise control for most of the year and then pick it up when he needs to. And then some of the other guys like LeBron have to keep it in high gear the entire season because his team's so weak. He has to be the team the whole year. Kobe doesn't have to do that. So LeBron's going to fizzle out again late in the season because, you know, Shaq will get hurt in February, return at some point later. But I think the Lakers, again, because Kobe late in the season will take over.
Yeah, I think I have the Lakers, and I'm gonna throw the Lakers in Portland as my final two in the West. I think there are teams that are good every year. The Lakers, Cleveland now because of LeBron. I mean, there are teams that are good every year who get into the playoffs as the same seed, the same place. And then every other team kind of fluctuates. I mean, one team that goes seventh in the East the next year could be at the very bottom. But I think Portland is one of those very, very rare teams, and it's because they're so young that each year you have to look at their wins that they had the previous year, and you need to add X amount of wins because they're going to get better every single year. And they're all athletic. They all play together very, very well. And really, I mean, Brandon Roy is the heart and soul of that team. That team is so good and has so many good players that he's not necessarily the guy. I mean, he is the guy with the ball in his hands for the last shot, but he doesn't have to be, and that's really dangerous because they have a bunch of other players. I mean, they have LaMarcus Aldridge, who's a great post player. He's really, really, really good. They have guys like Travis Outlaw, who's a great athlete. I think they're going to surprise some people, and that's my pick, them and the Lakers, but I have the Lakers going on to the championship. And then in the East, East is kind of tough. There's really only four teams that are going to compete. You're going to have Boston, Orlando, Cleveland, and then either Atlanta or Miami, but I think Atlanta, that's tough. I have Cleveland and Boston in the finals, and I have Boston winning it.
So you got another Lakers-Celtics final?
Yeah, but I think it's going to end up being Lakers in six, maybe even Lakers in five. I think it's going to be a pretty boring NBA finals. The Lakers have... like you said, they have a good team around Kobe, and this is the biggest difference between them and Cleveland. I mean, in Cleveland they have LeBron; he's a great player. But the whole debate between him and Kobe is really as to who's better. I don't think it's as much of a toss-up as some people say, and I really don't think that LeBron has surpassed Kobe. Kobe can create his own shot, learning to do that, but he still can't do it with consistency. He can't break down a guy off the dribble and hit a consistent jump shot like Kobe can.
Yeah.
And I mean, he can take it to the rim But so can Kobe Bryant. I think for the next couple of years, Kobe's still going to have the edge. But back to the whole title, Cleveland's a bad team if you take LeBron off.
Yeah.
And in the NBA, to win a championship, you have to have, I mean, the teams that have won in the past, decade.
Three guys,
yeah. I mean, you have Miami, San Antonio, the Lakers, and Boston. Miami had two stars. That was really the last year that Shaq.
Shaq was.
And they had Dwayne Wade. The Lakers have a once in a generation player in Kobe, but they still have a good core around him, and they have Pau Gasol, who is really turning into a good player. And the Cavs don't have that. They have LeBron. They have an old Shaq who doesn't look like he cares anymore.
Yeah.
And that team, if you take LeBron off that team, they're terrible. They don't win 30 games.
They might make the playoffs in the East. I mean, you don't even have to be 500. You could get 40 games and you can win 40 games and you'll make the playoffs in the East. Some problems I see with the other teams, the Magic, they kind of had the same problem last year. I mean, their leading scorer so far is Vince Carter. But do you think, I mean, Vince hasn't made it far in the playoffs at all. He's not a showboater. He's a dunk guy. He's not a playoff performer. Like, how do you think he's going to react? You know, if they get to the Eastern Conference final, say a 2-2 game five where, you know, they're on the road and he's got to make a big shot. I mean, he's never been there before. I don't think having that inexperience is going to help them at a position like that, because once you get late in the game, you want to go to your best player, you know, Dwight Howard. But the guys that are handling the ball, they're kind of nervous because they haven't been there. I mean, they were in the finals last year, obviously, but they're not the stars. The guys that handle ball aren't the stars. They're not the guys. So they can mess up. They're defended by Kobe, who's been there a lot. So they had that problem last year. Hedo Turkoglu was taken in handling the ball late in the game. So I don't know if you really want that. Now it's Vince. That doesn't seem right to me. So I think that's what their problem's going to be. The Celtics, I think Paul Pierce shows he can take over in the finals in the playoffs. So that could bring them to the finals. And then, you know, we've already talked about the Cavs. You know, the Nuggets. I have them in the Western Conference Finals, but I don't think they can win on the road. It's the same problem they've had the past couple of years. They're awesome at home. They get fueled by the home crowd, but on the road, they're just a different team.
Yeah, that's true. You can really, at a glance from a team, you can really tell as much as you need to know. And you can tell which teams are serious about winning it. And you can tell which teams are really just having a good time. Boston is serious. Cleveland, LeBron is serious. The rest of that team is not. Orlando doesn't look like they take it seriously. And I mean, a lot is said about, like, oh, this team is so fun-loving, you know, and that's what makes them good. That's what makes a team – that can make a team good. That doesn't make a team a championship team, because – And Orlando has the issue of their best player is Dwight Howard, who is a low post guy and a rebounder, and giving the ball to Vince Carter with the last shot. I mean, he's never been, like you said, he's like an earlier version of LeBron. You can't. I mean, he's a pretty good shooter, but he's not gonna pull a crossover and hit a fadeaway three with any sort of consistency. He's an athletic guy. He's a dunk guy. He's a highlight guy. But that team doesn't have a guy where they can say, "All right, like, we're gonna give it to him and he's gonna score for us." I think in a couple years, I think Jameer Nelson will be that.
Yeah.
I think he's a really good player, and I think that he's gonna really come into his own. He started to do that, but he got hurt last year, which is really too bad. But I think he's gonna evolve into that player for them.
Yeah. All right. So it looks like NBA is fairly taken care of. I think it's going to go according to plan for most of the year. Let's just move to something a little bit different. I don't know if you watched it today. The World Cup is coming up this summer. Did you see who the USA drew? Yeah, it's an awesome.
We have England. We have, who else is in that?
Algeria and Slovenia.
Algeria and Slovenia.
Yeah. So in the first game is the second day of the World Cup. USA versus England. I'm already looking forward to this. I'm starting to look online for USA jerseys and stuff because I'm getting stoked. I was really stoked about 06, even though we lost two games, got that one tie with all those red cards. But the USA England game, you know, I said Boston Tea Party round two because here we come. Because I think it'll be funny for, you know, David Beckham hanging out on the bench watching Landon Donovan run around on the field. We got a lot of young stars that play in England, so it's not unfamiliar to them. They've seen them before, but it goes the other way. England has seen our players a lot too. Basically, I think the U.S. is going to make the second round, and then it's just a crapshoot from there, honestly. I mean, we could be playing Germany second round, but I look for a tie against England. What I heard Lexi Lawless say on ESPN, if you can't beat Algeria and Slovenia, you don't deserve to go to the next round. So, you know, I think we deserve to go to the next round. I think we can beat both those teams. England always has kinks in the armor, and we might be that team to stab through that armor. Tell me about the World Cup. How are you looking forward to this? Are you shaking as much as I am?
I think this year for the World Cup, we're going to be better than than our last showing, and it really, really helps that we get that kind of cupcake draw. And I do think that we're going to make it to the next round. But I think that, I mean, whoever we play, the problem with U.S. soccer, yeah, a lot of our players play in Europe, but I just get the feeling like when you watch the other players and the other teams play, they're just these cutthroat like football soccer players that are just, I mean, that's what they've been bred to do. And like obviously our country and our culture is not one that pumps out soccer players with any consistency or at all the level of these other countries. But I think that for us to have any success, we would have to focus way more as a country on soccer. And that's why it's tough for me to say if we're going to do well, because I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, I'm speaking for most of the United States sports fans and myself, U.S. just wants to be good at everything. We assume that if we're playing, we're going to win, even if it's soccer and even if it's our fifth sport. Like, I don't know. I think athletes would probably choose basketball, baseball, football before soccer professionally. That's why it's not as big here. But we just jump into it and assume, all right, it's America. We got this. But it's not the case, which is why I think this year everyone says, oh, I remember that last time I saw us play. It was in the Confederations Cup. We almost beat Brazil. We beat Spain. Played well, and there's all this hype on ESPN now. And if it's hyping it up, it's gotta be game, right?
I think that we're doing a good job bringing more attention to it. And I really think if we have a good showing in this World Cup, I think that could really set things in motion for U.S. soccer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird how every kid plays in this country, and then they just immediately. We need to put more emphasis on our professional teams to give these kids. I mean, who grows up wanting to? Who's a freshman in high school? Really working on on their soccer game, and is like, yeah, I really want to play. And like, not a lot of kids are feeling that, because it's I mean, that's where you have to go to play competitive and good soccer.
Yeah, because no one wants to leave the U.S. and go play in Europe.
Right.
But I read somewhere today, it's like the basketball players that come from Europe that played in the U.S. Our soccer players go to Europe to play there. You know that they're good soccer players. You know that they're good basketball players that come here. It goes both ways. But I'm not an expert or anything on soccer. I'm not really an expert on basketball. You want to give any shout-outs to anyone? Any friends? Any colleagues listening?
I want to thank all the people out there listening to this podcast. Our most important listener, I want to thank me. I also want to thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I want to thank Joe Mead. Also yes. Known as my brother, Jeremy. He kind of helps me with this. I would like to thank Troy Tulowitzki and you, Kieran, for joining me on this wonderful 303 Sports podcast. For Kieran McGuire, I'm Spencer Thomas, 303 Sports Podcast, signing off.